What is up, Reality Church? How are we feeling today? Yeah. I love the energy that 1045 just brings. I love that. Hey, my name is Jordy Persinger. I am one of the pastors here at Reality Church, and I'm excited to be up here. Now, if you're a guest with us, we're excited that you're here. We understand that you could be a million different other places, but you decided to be here with us on this Sunday morning, and so we're excited. Welcome. Welcome. Now, we are in our second our sixth week of Intentionals 2, which is our second sermon series that we did. We started this off two summers ago. We did a series where we just looked at the lives of Old Testament characters and some people that they were ordinary people, but God did extraordinary things through them. And so we are in the second series of this and looking at 10 new characters, and now if you have a question as I'm going along here today, and you want to send that in, I will actually be answering questions before we close out. So if there is a question, the information is up there on the screen for you, and I would love to answer those questions. So when I was in high school, I looked at the concept of running like really easy. Like I was like, oh, that's simple. Like, could I run a 5K? Yeah, I could run a 5K. Could I run a half marathon? Yeah, I could run a half marathon. Could I run a marathon? Yeah, I can run a marathon. And I was just like, this is easy. Like, what? You don't have to train for it. You just do it, right? It's just running. That's all it is. And all throughout high school, the only thing I ever did when it came to running was the mile in PE that you, like, have to do in order to, like, pass the class. And that's all I ever did. And I never ran track. I never did cross country. And this was the same when it came to college. I never did any long distance running or anything, just like some pickup games of football and ultimate frisbee, just like that kind of stuff. And I still had this opinion that running was easy. Until Roger Graber walks into my office one day and he says, hey, you gonna run this half marathon with us as a life group? And I'm like, no. And he said, yeah, I told him no. All right, he will tell you that. I told him no, and he said, oh, come on. And I'm like, what? Like, if I'm going to pay to go run, right, I got to, like, it's got to be going to, like, a cause or something. I tried to cover it up with that. I was like, it's got to go to, like, a cause. It's got to go to some organization that's going to benefit something or someone. And I tried using that concept, and he's like, oh, it's all good. I'll pay for you. I'm like, had one backfired. So here I am. I am 2 weeks into this thing, training for a half marathon, and I feel like I'm going to keel over and die. I really do. I mean, I feel like this is not going to end well. And it's funny that I had this opinion about running, and it was only an opinion until the challenge was brought to my attention. And I think sometimes as the church, we can get very opinionated about things, can't we? I think we can sometimes stick our foot in our mouth and say something that we shouldn't. And culture looks in to the church and says, that's a place of a bunch of hypocrites. That's a place of a bunch of good people or a bunch of people who hate sinners. And sometimes that's the reputation that we get. And sometimes we, as the church, are fired up about something, but we take that opinion that we have about it and we just put it on social media. We don't do anything about it. Well, what if we made the church look a little confused, or people outside the church look a little confused when we showed how to love people and live for people, and they're confused that and the concept of loving and living for people and a Christian come together to be the same thing? Well, how confused would people get? I think it would make them look twice. I want to take some time this morning to talk about a story we find in the Old Testament of Shiphrah and Puah, two Hebrew midwives who stand up against Pharaoh, the most powerful guy of all time, in this position, in this time, in this age, in this history, in this story. They stand up against Pharaoh. And so open up to Exodus 1. That's where we're going to be today. And before I get started, though, I want to talk a little bit about the background information we have here, because This is a time of after Joseph had died. Now, Joseph, being this character, this person in the Old Testament who God actually gave him the authority to kind of be over God's people because of what he went through and how faithful he was to God. And so this Joseph was this guy who, like, he starts out with his brothers trying to kill him. That doesn't work, so they sell him into slavery, and then he gets in jail, and then he's accused of sleeping with a king's wife. And all through all this craziness, God sees how faithful he is. And so he says, you know what, I'm gonna grant you power and authority over my people, and you are going to lead them. And so it comes to this point where Joseph just died, all of his people that were in leadership with him had just died, and a new king is in power, and this new king is Pharaoh. And so we are going to start in on verse 8 here. It says, eventually a new king came to power in Egypt who knew nothing about Joseph or what he had done. He said to his people, look, the people of Israel now outnumber us and are stronger than we are. I want to just say Hebrew and Israelite, they're the same people. All right, so whenever I use those two words, just we're talking about the same group of people. And at this point, Pharaoh gets right into this kingship thing, right? And he's in power, and right off the bat, he's scared. He's scared of the people of Israel and what God is doing. And he's scared because they keep multiplying and they keep growing in number, and he's afraid of what that's going to do in the future, probably the soon future, and what that's going to take over him being king and him having power and all these things. So going to verse 10, this is Pharaoh talking here. He says, we must make a plan to keep them from growing even more. If we don't, and if war breaks out, they will join our enemies and fight against us. Then they will escape from the country. So Pharaoh is getting a little nervous, and he's thinking, man, we got to do something, right? Ah, that's it. We'll make them work really, really hard. We'll make them slaves, and we'll make them start working in the heat and give them a bunch of hard manual labor to do, and that'll be the solution to everything. They won't continue to grow. They won't want their kids to grow up with this. And so goes into verse 11 here. So the Egyptians made the Israelites their slaves. They appointed brutal slave drivers over them, hoping to wear them down with crushing labor. They forced them to build the cities of Pithom and Ramses as supply centers for the king. Now, Pharaoh becomes a kind of a tyrant in this moment, because he sees these two cities that he has total control over, and he wants to have even more control, so he puts them together. He starts building them into one kingdom, one nation. Because he's so powerful, he wants to continue that power to be there. So what he does is he gets one way in, one way out of this new one city that he's building together, and he says, you know what, I'm going to make the Israelites do it. I'm going to make the Israelites do all this and work really, really hard, and no one's going to stand in my way. And this is what Pharaoh's doing. And then he realizes that when he does this, he realizes that the more they keep growing, you know what that means? Israelites start making some babies, okay? So gets to this point where he's like, this is out of control. I don't know what to do. And he's scared that the Egyptians are going to take over. He's scared that he's frantic almost right now. Like parents, have you ever lost your kid in the grocery store? And you like freak out and you're like, where do they go? Like you put something down and they're gone, and you don't even care about what you just picked up. You're just going to go find them. He is frantic. The Egyptians are frantic. They're freaking out. Going into verse 13 here, it says, so the Egyptians worked the people of Israel without mercy. They made their lives bitter, forcing them to mix mortar and make bricks and do all the work in the fields. They were ruthless in all their demands. So, come to this point where they are probably dying. They're probably getting sick. You probably can't imagine that, working in the desert heat and morning, day, and night. And he says, man, it's still not working. Still not working. We got to do something. So what he does is he brings the Hebrew midwives to him, and he says, Shipra and Pua. He gives them this command. Going into verse 16, he says, when you help the Hebrew women as they give birth, watch as they deliver. If the baby is a boy, kill him. If it is a girl, let her live. Pharaoh is going to do whatever it takes to stop this growth because he's scared of what the Hebrews are going to do. He comes to the point where he is willing to kill babies. And I don't want to make you sad in this moment, but I think it's important information that we need to know because it shows what kind of situation Shipra and Pua are in. When they would kill babies in this time, they would allow them to be birthed, and then they would take them to the riverside, and they would accidentally drop them, or they would strangle them. Because the parents would see them go into the riverside to be cleaned, but they would kill them instead. And so this is the situation that Shipra and Pua have on them. I mean, they're in a situation where they're thinking, I don't know what to do. Like, and this is their own people. Like, Shipra and Pua are Hebrew women, and they're supposed to be killing Hebrew boys, little babies. They're at the lowest of the low positions because they are delivering babies of slaves. So they're like slaves to slaves right now. They have no power in their position and in this situation. And so they think, man, the only thing that's going to happen is if God intervenes and we stand on God's will. Verse 17, but because the midwives feared God, I'm going to come back to that, they refused to obey the king's orders. They allowed the boys to live too. Feared, I love that word. This word, fear, we often think scary when we think fear. But this in this context, this is not what fear, it's not scary. It's not what that means. It means out of awe and reverence of God. It's out of love for who God is and who he says he is, and how majestic he is, how he's full of miracles and he's full of grace. He's full of love. They know who God is, and they say, we're going to fear God because of his authority and his power and who he is. Not because he's scary, but because who he is and who he says he is. So the midwives fear God. And when they fear God, they realize God's creation, and they realize his rule over life. And they say, if we're going to fear God, that means we're going to disobey Pharaoh. We're going to be obedient to God and his will and what he is doing. Well, here's the thing. They're risking everything. They're risking their life. Because Pharaoh's the most powerful guy at this time. He can kill him right then and there. He could call soldiers in to just kill him. And so they are risking everything that they have. And so he brings, they obey God. They allow the boys to live. And Pharaoh obviously sees this because he's seeing a little baby boys being grown up and or growing up. And he says, all right, I got what's going on? He brings them to him and he says, what are you doing? I gave you this command. Why aren't you obeying me? And they said this here in verse 19. They are more vigorous and have their babies so quickly that we cannot get there in time. This is what they say. This is what they answer when he says, what are you doing? So they kind of use a cover up here. And this is risky because he could kill them. They're willing to lay down their life for what is right. In history, we see that all the time, don't we? We see people standing for what they believe in. We see Rosa Parks and what she did on the bus, sparking something. And Martin Luther King who started a movement to change the course of U.S. history. We see the unknown rebel in front of the tanks. This is a historic picture. Standing for what is right. We see Harriet Tubman standing for slaves. We see Gandhi, who started a movement in India. What about some of the people we don't really know about? What about Heinz Boysen, who shared German military secrets with Russia because he saw what Hitler was doing was wrong? Or Chief Joseph, who stood for his tribe's freedoms and his tribe's rights to live in America, giving them land and protecting that? Or what about Todd Beamer and the passengers of Flight 93? When a terrorist took over their plane, they fought back. And instead, that plane going into a building, they risked their lives landing it in a field so more people wouldn't die. These people knew what was right and they stood for it. Since the midwives decide to obey God, we see God actually being good to them. It says in Scripture, it says God blesses them with a family and continues to grow the Hebrew people. And this, it may end here for us in Scripture, but it continues to go on with the story, though, because it says, then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people, throw every newborn Hebrew boy into the Nile River, but you may let the girls live. So we have this moment where Pharaoh's like, I'm going to still keep fighting. I'm going to still keep trying to get my way. I'm going to still kind of try to keep power in this nation. And it actually sets up for Moses to be born. So this story brings up a big topic in today's culture, doesn't it? Brings up the topic of abortion. Are you pro-life or are you pro-choice? That's the question we're always hit with, right? Sometimes I need to rein myself in because I get a little fired up when it comes to this topic. And I know you can too, because I've seen it on Facebook, you getting fired up when a neighbor dog poops on your lawn. I know you can get fired up, church. I get fired up because this is human life we're talking about. Jesus died for every single person that would be created. Is a baby in the womb not created? The moment of conception is the moment when life starts. Culture tells us, if you want to have an abortion, go ahead and have an abortion. You weren't trying to get pregnant, but you did, go ahead and have an abortion. Here's a brochure of 10 places you can go get one. Culture tells us this. In fact, culture sells this to us. Now, if you're in the room, maybe you're a woman who has gone through an abortion. Maybe you feel the shame and the guilt of it. I want you to know that there's grace. God's full of grace. That's who He is. Bring that to the cross, because God is forgiving and God is loving. We make mistakes all the time. We make decisions that we wish we would have never made. I make mistakes. If you're a woman who is watching right now and maybe online or you're in here and you're contemplating an abortion right now, I want you to know that God's got you. God's got you and your little bundle of joy, because He's going to take care of that baby and He's going to use the church to do it. Church, we're to teach with truth and grace. Anytime we teach truth to someone who may not want to hear it, we gotta almost back it up with grace, right? This is how Jesus did it. This is how we are to do it. We're not going to condemn those who are having abortions or thinking about abortions. No, in fact, we're going to help them and we're going to love them. We're not going to group up and picket an abortion clinic, but instead we're going to stand on the sidewalk and we're going to say, hey, come have a conversation with me. Let me tell you something. We're going to have those conversations with the women who are about to go make a decision. Oftentimes, we just want to get our point across, right? We want to We want to make a point. Let's make a difference. Whenever I hear people's opinions, I'm like, okay, what are you doing about it? And I've been asked that same question. And I hope people call me out on it. What if the church was known for what they do for people? Man, that'd be so powerful in Omaha, in Nebraska, in the United States. Here's the thing, Pharaoh is a false god. In our culture, there's plenty of false gods. Some of those can be money. Some of those can be the American dream or power or the choice of choosing or whatever it is. But the one that fires me up the most, because I am a youth pastor and I see it all the time, is when sports and dance and show choir and whatever else there is for kids to do these days becomes a god to them. That's what fires me up. We have students playing sports year-round. We have students playing select because their coach at the high school told them that they had to play select in order to make varsity. I had a girl tell me that, and I asked her how much select would be. She told me for a winter, 4 months, $2,000. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Just so she can make varsity. Here's the thing, guys. We jam it into our kids' heads a lot, and culture does as well, that they gotta do all these things and be this person. The fact that they have all this pressure on them to be a 4.0 student and getting all these scholarships and doing all these things to go to college to do get a degree that they probably won't ever use in their lifetime anyway. Just hoping that would get a couple chuckles. Or show choir and band that take up 12 hours on a Saturday, and then students don't want to come to church because they're so exhausted and that's the last thing they want to be doing. Parents, I want to encourage you to stand for your kids. I want to encourage you to show them who they are. They're a child of the one true King. They're not what culture tells them they are or what they should be doing. Let me tell you something. Going back to the sports thing, there's plenty of NFL and NBA stars and whatever else that they didn't play select. David Johnson, top five running back of the NFL right now, he didn't play select. He just played high school football. Or Michael Jordan got cut from his basketball team. I mean, there's all these kinds of people that we can look at and say they didn't do all these things, jump through all these hoops just to be accepted by the culture. Parents, I want to encourage you to take parental guidance, and I'm not telling you to tell them what to do and what not to do, but to teach them who they are. And maybe leaving here today, and if this is a problem in your family, maybe it's they don't play select. Maybe it's they don't play year-round, or maybe they decide to just drop something in their life that's so busy. Because so oftentimes, these things are, even though they're good things, they can become a god, and they can strip away our spiritual lives. Because in John 10:10, it tells us, the thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy, but my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Jesus stood for all of us, even when everyone was against him. He fought for the truth to the point where he died for it. Which brings a question, are you standing off to the side and not doing anything about what's going on, or are you getting into the trenches? When things like abortion happen, are you going to the clinics and not picketing, but are you standing there and having conversations with people walking in the doors that are about to make a decision that they will someday regret? When we stand for God's will, we see life change. We see people's lives transformed. If you want to see authentic change in the world, move from opinion to action. Move from opinion to action. Shipra and Pua were right in the place that they needed to be. you are in the place that you need to be. Church, whew, the church is a really strong and powerful thing. Let's use it. Let's use it to change the world. So here's the thing. Selfishness is shown in man's will, but selflessness is shown in God's will. I love that. What do we stand for? What are we doing? Are we standing for God's will, or are we standing for our own selfish desires? As I said before, we got some questions that will be coming up on the screen. And before we start with that, I just want to say that in the back, we started doing something. It's kind of cool. We put up all the sermons that we've gone through, and this one included, and the rest of them as we continue on this series. In the back on the wall, there's a picture of each one, and we want to know your stories. We want to know if you've been able to relate to some of these things that we've been going through. Maybe today you stood defiant for your kid, for something that was happening in the school system, or whatever it was. We want to hear that story. If you want to go out there, maybe take it home, just bring it back and put it at the kiosk for us, so we can have those and we can look at those as a staff. We can check those out. That would be really neat for us. And I don't know what else they want to do with them, but oh man. So I'm training for the half marathon. I like this. I'm training for it right now. There's four of us in our life group, and some of them are over in this area. I'm not gonna call them out, but we are training right now. We're running as a group on Saturdays or Fridays, whenever we can make it happen. We're running every day. Roger gave us a sheet, and we're getting trained for it, man. I mean, I've run 6 miles at once. Seven more is just daunting. So, So it's September 9th, I believe it is. So, not yet, but I will be. How do you stand for kids who come from low socioeconomic areas? Kids who are not necessarily driven by things like show choir, but are more interested in where they sleep at night. Oh, man, I love that. Start a movement. Start an organization. Start something. Start doing something, because here's the thing, when we get fired up about something, we always just want to put it on Facebook or whatever, but we never want to go beyond that, because action takes a lot of doing, doesn't it? If you want to see authentic change in the world, move from opinion to action. Partner with the church. Look, there's 500 of you in here. Find people who have the same idea and start an after school program, start something. Start something where it's specifically for kids who are living on the streets. Yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of kids that don't know where their next meal is gonna be, where it's gonna come from. So, yeah, start something. How do we be defiant without being pushy and obnoxious? That's good. Look at Jesus' life. He wasn't obnoxious. He wasn't pushy. He taught with truth and grace. He was gentle. But man, he was fired up. He was fired up about people's lives. That's what he was on this earth to do. He was on this earth to serve and to love people. And so I think, man, I know so many people, if I walked up to them and I said something I know they're going to be against, they're not obnoxious people, but they know where they stand. And they're willing to fight for it. So I think pushy and obnoxious just comes from personality. And I think if that is you, I think that's something you just need to work on. And so it's not showing, showing a obnoxious and pushy side. Work on just being gentle and loving, and know where your truth is, and base it off of that. What does Reality Church do to help counter a society that seems to lean towards pro-choice options? How can I help the church provide options for people looking to help with that choice? So we partner with Bethlehem House, who is a place where mothers can come when they need a place to stay. We help with that. So here's the thing. How cool would it be if we had a woman in our church today about to have an abortion, but five people hear about it, and they don't condemn her, nothing like that, but they come alongside her and they say, hey, I want to help. What can I do? Can I buy food for you? Can I buy diapers for you? What can I do? We're going to take on this responsibility with you. So I think it starts with you guys. I think it starts with people that you may know. It's hard to know who's, you know, people outside of the church who are pro-choice. It's hard to know that unless they're, you know, in an organization fighting against, you know, pro-life or something like that. But I think it starts with us. I think it starts with what we want to do to help those, and starting with Bethlehem House. Go help with Bethlehem House. I'm all up for people starting organizations because they're moved by what's going on in this world and how wrong it is. So I don't know what that looks like, but what about the woman who isn't regretful about the abortion? Is she forgiven? I guess my question here is, I think you need to start looking at Jesus' life a little bit. Because all Jesus ever wanted to do was to love people. And he wanted to give the opportunity for people to know about his truth. That's a hard question. I think everybody's forgiven. It's based on what, are you going to act on that forgiveness? Are you going to turn to Jesus? Are you going to give your life to him? God forgives. God saves. So that's a really hard question. If that was you, I'll be in the new part of the building. We'll talk a little further about that. I've tried standing up for what's right, and I get ridiculed and shot down for being self-righteous and bigoted. How can you be defiant about the right things but not have such a harsh reaction from people? Jesus, man. This is Jesus' life right here. Like Jesus was the guy who stood up for what was right and for every single person's life, and he got killed for it. Like, they crucified him on a cross. Yeah, he also got things yelled at him, but what'd he do? He taught with truth and he taught with grace. Teach with truth. And when you get ridiculed, follow it with grace. That's who Jesus was. That's who Jesus is and who he says he is. Great questions, man. Those are some hard questions. Shipper and Pua stood defiant for what they knew was right. Church, where are we standing? Church, what are we doing? I want you to think about the thing that keeps you up at night, that bugs you every time you hear about it or see it. Maybe it's abortion. Maybe it's the drug use in Omaha. Maybe it's the kids who don't have a place to stay. Maybe it's human trafficking. Whatever it is, I want you to find that niche, I guess you could say. Find that and do something about it. Move from opinion to action. Start doing something. Start acting upon it. Changing the world. Jesus is all about life change, man. That's who he is. That's why he's so awesome. So, start changing the world. started doing something about it. Father, thank you so much for this opportunity to come to church this morning and to learn about how you want us to stand for your will. And when everything's against us, God, I pray that we stand defiant and we lean in on you because we need you. And whenever we see something that isn't right, God, I pray that we would stand. We would do what we need to do for your will to be done and to lives to be saved and transformed. God, we love you. In Jesus' name, amen.